Cody Alcoholic.
Dale, thanks so much for asking me to speak tonight. Appreciate everybody being here. Divisional, NFL divisional playoff weekend. It's a pretty big crowd. I was thinking, you know, I mean, I love football, and I'd be home watching it, but I'll be able to see the Chiefs Bills second half. And I was thinking earlier, if I was drinking, I'd be blacked out by halftime, so I wouldn't see it either. So my sobriety day is December 2nd, 2011. Have a sponsor and I have a home group. It's the Common Solution, 7:30 on Thursday nights in Charlottesville. And home group's been really important in my sobriety. I think like my home group is a solution-based home group. And all home groups are great. And you need, and I recommend anything being getting a sponsor and making sure you have a home group. But I didn't understand what a solution-based home group meant until I showed up and got in the middle of one, and I do today. Have a job in that group. I'm the cleanup number two, not even the number one cleanup guy. I'm the number two cleanup guy. I'm also the GSR. So that what that means is I represent our home group at each of the district meetings that meet once a month. It's the heart of Virginia is what – is our district. And then I also, as GSR, go to the assemblies and conventions that the area hosts in Virginia. It's a, our home group, it's a two-year commitment. But regardless of whatever job I have, the most important thing is that I have a responsibility at my home group. And that's just as important today as it was when I first showed up there. And what happens is if I don't show up, like Thursday night, if I'm not there, the job doesn't get done. You know, cleanup man number two is not there. But also there are some guys that are going to be calling me afterwards and saying, hey, what's going on? You all right? You know, and after that, being so utterly hopeless and lonely and just desolate right before you walked in, at least when I walked in here the last time, to have people looking out for you is pretty good feeling. Let's see. Oh, we also take meetings into the regional jail. We're going to kick that back in the end of the month, like the 31st, which is a Wednesday, or the 30th, Wednesday, whatever Wednesday is that week. We've been out of that for like 5 years. We've done some Zoom, but the Charlottesville Regional Jail is going to let people back in. So we're going to, we've been taking a meeting in there up until COVID hit. And I tell you what, that's been the most amazing experience I've ever had, taking a meeting into a jail. I had the privilege of, there's a guy in there that came to our meeting like for 6 months and got out. And I had the privilege of sponsoring him. And he's now lives over on the Eastern Shore, and he showed up to our home group a couple of weeks ago and had pictures of his new wife, baby, and it's just being, and still busy in AA. Grateful. You know, how cool is that? So if you ever have the opportunity to take a meeting into a jail, please do. I didn't think I had the time to do it. And I do. You know, it seems like the more time I put into Alcoholics Anonymous, like the more things I do in AA, for whatever reason, I have a lot more time to do the other stuff. And then when I, like my things on golf or work or whatever it is, and the more I'm doing in AA, the more time I have for my hobbies and other things in life. All right. So I'll try to tell you guys in a general way. Oh, and Billy, little AA television announcement here. Look, this is it. So here they are. If you guys want to come check out Saturday, February 24th, we have a day event. We're going to have three speakers. Lunch is provided, two speakers in the morning, and then lunch, and then speaker in the afternoon. It's called No One Among Us. It's a really great event. Not as the food's not as good as the deal y'all the have they got. I mean, look, I don't know. I remember coming up here. Well, that's amazing. So I'll try to tell y'all in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what's going on today. So, like Dale said, I live in Kinsale, Virginia now, and I moved down there when I was in sixth grade. I was born up in Connecticut, and you know, my story, like the wheels really came off for me later on. You know, I had a, unfortunately, I had a lot of fun drinking. And I had a lot of fun drinking without a whole lot of consequences until I did have consequences. And you know, we're all, I mean, I found, you know, once I identified as an alcoholic and once I totally just surrendered and gave up, and I wasn't the guy sitting there watching people go up to the podium or listening to people share and saying, I'm not like you. You know, I mean, I had to get beaten down enough to know that whether it's 38 when the wheels come off or 21 or 18, it doesn't matter. Because I identify with you regardless of your age when the wheels came off, because now I don't know what's going to happen if I take a drink, right? Same way with you. So that's what makes us, you know, and without a sufficient substitute for that drink, I can't not take it. You know, I don't have a defense against that first drink. And sometimes it happens when you're 18 years old, you start blacking out right away. I didn't. You know, actually, I had a little pride that I didn't black. I didn't black out in college, but I did at the end. You know, I did. So I born in Connecticut. My last name's Chavez. My dad's from Lima, Peru. I was raised by my grandparents on my mom's side. My dad and I, dad passed away this year. He and I have had a very close relationship. Love my dad. Never lived with him. I always felt a little different and things were a little strange because I felt like I always was explaining, like, why did I live with my grandparents? Where was my mom? Why is your last name Chavez? It was always this, like, trying to, it's this long explanation. And I always envy people who just said, yeah, I live in Richmond. You know, I always say it's just like on and on. But what happened was my dad came to the States to study medicine in the mid 60s. He met my mom. And my grandma is born on 2nd Street in Charlottesville. My grandfather is from Connecticut, and they met during the war. And being raised by that generation is probably one of the greatest blessings I ever had. I was there. They were two amazing people who loved me. But what happened was my mom, bit of a wild child. And I think looking through letters and things, she was probably bipolar. So she met my dad, dumped this guy that she was supposed to marry, who my grandfather really wanted him to marry her. He was like a stockbroker. And anyway, then my dad's a swarthy guy from Peru. He couldn't even speak English. She falls in love with him. They get married. He's doing his residency at the Bridgeport Hospital. They have me. Everything seems to be going okay. But then she goes into this real deep depression, and probably postpartum depression. She kills herself. Takes her life. So, I mean, I'm 1 year old. But my grandparents, my maternal grandparents, are right there as well. So there's this big deal about whether I'm going to Peru or not. Long story short, I stay in the States, and my grandparents raised me. My dad's in the next town over. We see each other all the time. He's great. He gets remarried. I have a half brother, 2 stepbrothers, stepsisters. We never lived in the same house, but everything's fine. And I say all that because I grew up in a loving household, but I did use the fact that my mom, you know, my mom took her life, you know, and it's like, how in the world can someone be, this is what I thought before Alcoholics Anonymous, how in the world can someone be that selfish? You know, how could you do that? And that's what I thought until I went through the steps and really understood. You know, I'll talk more about that later. So anyway, we moved to Virginia. My grandfather worked for the Borden Company, LC the Cow, that whole deal. And he retired from Borden. And we moved to Virginia in the 6th grade. And it was just normal. You know, I mean, I was in the kind of in the middle of nowhere. If you're ever in the northern neck, there's not much there except water, hay, corn and soybeans. And I moved down in the middle of summer and it was brutal. And we started school and I made some friends and just it was just normal. You know, first drink was in high school. You know, and I was on the beach with some buddies, some girls. We had a Country Time lemonade, big bottle, and some ice and a bottle of vodka. And we poured that in and it was on the beach, smoked some cigarettes, could talk to girls, felt confident. music. It was great. I didn't go home that night and steal all my grandparents' liquor and drink it down. I don't know why. I just had a great night and went home. Same through high school, college. I didn't. The one thing that was consistent, though, was that feeling of, I don't know if it's anxiety, it's anxiousness in my stomach. You know, I'd get these waves of, I get anxiety is the best way to describe it. Like, you start at your feet and you go, and even if I'm sitting in class, or it would just hit me. Feeling of a little, just different, you know, just feeling a little different than everybody. I kind of know what it is today. That was like the, it wasn't, but I didn't just run and drink myself into oblivion. Now, when I got to college, and went through it, I didn't study much. I didn't take advantage of that opportunity. You know, my dad, he went had a couple of heart attacks. He went through some health stuff, and you know, I never missed a day in college. Never missed any opportunity. Had a lot of opportunity, and I felt, looking back on it, I wasted it. You know, I didn't take it seriously, and I graduated. But I look back on it, it's like, you know, just, because I have a son now who's, he's a knucklehead. And so I'm getting some payback. I got a daughter who's just a rock star. She's the happiest. I mean, and I love him. I love him to death. He's awesome, but he's a little bit like me. You know, she's a lot like her, I guess, like her mother. But I'm thinking about, you know, I always think about that and wish that I wish that I had understood the sacrifices that people made for me, that could have been a little more grateful. But get through college. And what I wanted to do was, and again, drinking is just, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I mean, going out, no DUIs, no blackouts, just having a good time. So after I graduate from school, I come back to the Northern Neck, and where my grandparents are still living. And I go to work for a lumber company there, called Potomac Supply. It was my wife now, Stacy, it was her family business. So I'm really close with that family, and I'm working there. And before I go up to DC to get my first job, they asked me to work for a little while, and I do, and to help with a project for like 6 months before I go to DC. So I do that, and then I end up staying there for 22 years in the Northern Neck. Stacy and I started dating. She'd gone to the University of Vermont. She back home worked in the family business. She and I are traveling in our 20s before we got married, having a ball, going to visit our buddies in New York, you know, living in the Northern Neck on the water, you know, going out on boats, having friends down to visit, and life's good, you know. Like it says Bill in the story, his story is talking about, for a time, money threw something applause my way. Life was good until it wasn't. And what started to happen to me, and I didn't really notice it, but I started drinking a little more. We got married, and I just started developing all these resentments. And what I started to see was, I'm living in the Northern Neck, and my friends are in Richmond, and they're in DC. And the family business, listen, I never missed a paycheck there. It was good till it wasn't, because it went out of business in 2008 when everything hit. But they took really good care of me. But a family business is a family business. And when you got a lot of people in the family involved in it, it is a little crazy. And I love them today, but it was crazy. And a lot of stuff happened. Stacy had to take a little break from the business because of the stress and strain. There was mental illness, trying to figure out who, taking somebody out of the, it was rough. But I could have gone and found another job, you know? But what I did was I just started stacking up these resentments. And I had a lot of them when I put them down on paper to show my sponsor when I finally got sober. But what I also was doing was, the drinking was increasing. You know, there was little things started happening. You know, I went up to a Commanders game. What was the Redskins at that time? And I went up to a game with a buddy of mine, and we uh, We were in the parking lot for the first half of the game. They're playing the Cardinals, and we drank an entire big bottle of Absolute Citron vodka. That was my favorite thing to drink, was Absolute Citron. And I used to love drinking them in mini bottles. So I'd get sleeves and mini bottles because you could store them, hide them everywhere. You put a bunch of them in your car, you put them in your coats. It's great. But this day we had a big bottle of Absolut Citron, and we drank that entire bottle. And then we went into the game and realized we were probably too drunk to be in the game. So we left. We got in the car. We had a little Weber grill, which I drove over and jumped on the beltway. And what happened was is Tom had my buddy Tom had popped open a beer, and he was drinking a beer, and we were just driving, and I wasn't paying attention. And I hit a car and hit another car. And it wasn't real bad, but I'm sitting there in the car. Tom's beer goes all over the windshield. He has peace of mind, he presence of mind to get up and go and check on the beer. Now, what I did was I grabbed, there's a bunch of change, like a big change. I grabbed a bunch of change because I had heard that if you shove a bunch of change in your mouth and then spit it out before you have to do that breathalyzer, it wouldn't register. Now, I don't know where I heard that. You can't, it doesn't, never is that mentioned anywhere. But anyway, so I'm sitting there like a chipmunk. Tom's out there dealing with, and he comes back in. Now we are, this all happens right near an exit. And Tom sits there and he's like cleaning off the beer out the window. And he goes, looked at me and he goes, look, we got a couple of choices here. He said, we can pull off over there and get a DUI, or we can just leave because they're fine. Nobody's hurt. So he said, and he'd spit that those pennies out of your mouth. So I spit the pennies out and we took off and they didn't get a license plate. So no consequences. I didn't get in any trouble after that. I'm coming across the bridge. Buddy of mine's getting divorced in Richmond. So I go up to help him out. What that means is to go get drunk with him. And I'm coming across the y'all ever been to Tappahannock or going into Warsaw from the Northern Neck? You go over the bridge. Bridge goes over the Rappahannock River. We live on the Potomac River. So I'm going over that bridge after a great night in Richmond. And there's just nothing but just blue lights and stuff on the other side. And other than just stopping the car and jumping off the bridge, there's nothing I can do but to get over there. So I go over there. There's just a bunch of state troopers. And there's one car that's a local Warsaw deputy car. And that guy, there's three other cars getting checked out by these troopers. And the deputy guy comes over to me. And wouldn't you know that this guy worked over at the plant for me 3 summers in a row before he went and got become a deputy. So I am drunk. And he looks at me and goes, oh, Doty. He goes, I'll get you, buddy. He goes, we're good. I'm gone. He leads me around. It's twice. Those are two DUIs that I, so no consequences, right? Anyway, we'll fast forward a little bit. We're still in the Northern Neck, working in lumber company, family business still crazy. We have a boy, Teddy, knucklehead. He just turned 19 this month. And what the pattern is that I'm drinking a fair amount, you know, and Stacy's asked me maybe just to curb back a little bit on the drinking. And what that looked like was, okay, I'll just have a drink or two, and then you'll have a couple glasses of wine, and then we'll have dinner, which is fine. Except that on the way home, I would have those minis, and I love the Propel, big Propel bottle of like flavored water, pour half of it out, four, five, six of those minis in. I got a 12-minute ride home. Slam that down, feel good when I walk in. And she's like, why are you slurring your words after? And then I have a drink at home and it's like a, you know, four finger Citron and I'm lit up like a Christmas tree with one drink that she sees and she doesn't get it, you know? Teddy's now two or three, he's four. He's four. And I'm now, that's when the switch happened. You know, I guess I'm 35, maybe. This is going on. We have a place down the road from us where we would host customers and folks at this house that we always kept fully stocked. And what started happening was in the morning when I would go to work, I'd stop there and get a couple beers for the ride into work to a lumber company, a manufacturing sawmill treating plant. I mean, I'm walking through like I'm in sales and logistics, and I've got a at this point, I'm VP, I'm fairly important role in the business for the family, you know, and I'm drinking in the morning before I get there. And then at lunchtime, I'm going to the liquor store and I'm buying sleeves of minis and it's just this deal. So, you know, I get to the point where it's basically 24/7. I've got booze in me. You know, I'm trying to hide it. And the one thing I could hang on to was I never blacked out. And then I would try to stop for a little bit. You know, I could stop for a week or two, kind of tone it back down, maybe go to the gym more, whatever it is. But pretty soon, and I'm stopping on my own. I mean, Stacy's not saying that you need that. We're not there yet. But I try to stop, but I couldn't stop on my own, right? And I tried to do that for a long time. So one morning, after sleeping in the guest room, because I hadn't realized this, but I started to black out and I would end up waking up in the guest room. And I never really realized what was going on, but I would wake up in the guest room. And that went on for a couple nights over a month. And the second time it happened, Stacy asked me to sit down. And you know, remember those little camcorder things? You little video. Anyway, before I went to work, she sat me down and put that little video in, and there I am in a blackout, saying things, screaming at her about her family and about situation. And you know, you don't know how this comes about, but it's like full blown anger, just horrible what I'm saying to her, all the F, it's just really bad. And then here comes Teddy, 4 years old, in the video, pulling on my shirt, just saying, "Daddy, you know, I just want to go to bed. Stop yelling." So, of course, any normal individual in that kind of situation would be like, "I promise I will never, I'm done. You know, I'll never drink again." And of course, that lasted about a week. And one night, Stacy, she told me, in one of my first trips to camp, alcohol camp, we were in the family session. And she shared this story that when I was in a blackout and in the guest room, this real heavy lamp was next to the bed. And she had that thing over her head and was going to smash my skull. And the only reason she didn't do it is because she was at that point chairman of the board of the local domestic abuse shelter. And they were in this huge campaign to raise all this money. And she figured it would hurt the cause. But it's those, you know, it's like, okay, I'll never, okay, I'm not going to stop drinking. And I couldn't. And finally, 2007, you know, we're, and still are today, at the little Episcopal church there, we're pretty involved in that church. And she was I think head of the altar guild, the flowers. So she's altar guild. So she's going there to do the flowers, and I'm going to meet her there, you know. Well, for some reason, I get this great idea that I got time to grab Teddy and go down and get on the boat, take a little spin before church. But I had had a little bit of vodka, a whole lot actually, and because she left pretty early. So I'm hammered. Teddy and I are down there, and I thank God I put him in a life jacket, put him in the boat, and then I tried to get in the boat and I fell, and I hit my head, and I thank God I mean I could have drowned right there. Trying to get back in the boat, and it's a mess. And he's screaming, he's like, "What's going on? What is this crazy person, my father, doing?" You know. And so I got back in the boat and came back home, and Stacy's there, and so the jig, it's up. You know, either leave the house or go do something. So the something was alcohol camp, and I went out. I was like, "Okay, great, let's do that. I'm good." So I went, and listen, if I had done what they told me to do in that place, I'd have been fine, right? What I do remember though is being separated from alcohol for the first time in a long time. You know, because at that point of falling in the water with Teddy, it'd been a few months of waking up middle of the night and drinking. So I was shaking. I had to drink because I would shake all the pieces. So finally, you know, separated from alcohol, they're telling you to get a sponsor, home group, do the steps, laying exactly. I went to this halfway place, halfway house, out there for, I was supposed to go for 3 months, and I was there 15 days, I had a sponsor, and I made a decision that I felt so good, I needed to go back home because I have a job and I have a family and I have things to do. And I remember sitting there where was that? St. Paul, Minnesota. And that guy, that sponsor said, "Dirty, let me just tell you something, buddy. If you just give me a month, we're going to go through the book. We're going to do the steps. You're going to do, you know, fourth and fifth, start cleaning things up, make some amends. And then when you get back home, you're going to hit the ground running." And I said, "You don't understand. You don't understand. I'm good. You know, I don't have a problem with God. People in there, in the place out, they're like, I'll never get to, I don't trust God. I'm like, I don't have a problem with God. I'm a Episcopal church. I stay sober. I'm never going to drink again." I met people in that place, in that rehab, that there was their second, third, and fourth time going to a rehab facility. What idiot shows back up at a rehab facility when you know you can't drink again? And so I rolled out of there ready to go. And I made it 2 years. And one day, you know, but I could have made it 2 years. That happened to be 2 years. Could have been 2 months, could have been 2 weeks, could have been 4 years. I don't know. At some point, I'm going to drink again. It just so happened on that day I drank it. Now, I didn't wake up that day thinking I'm going to pick up a drink. I didn't go to bed the night before saying this is it. But it was about 2 years. No defense. And what happened after that was the next 2 years. We moved, after I got out of that first rehab, we moved to Charlottesville to open a sales and buying office for the business. We had our daughter, Kate. And we were in Charlottesville up until COVID, and then we moved back to the river so Kate could get into school. So we're in Charlottesville. And, you know, before I went to that first rehab, I could give you a long laundry list of reasons why I drank. I wanted to be out of Kinsale. I'm tired of living in this Northern Neck area. It's driving me crazy. All my buddies are in Richmond and Charlottesville. I want to be there. I was there. Tired of working for this crazy family business. I need a little separation. We opened our own office. I didn't have to deal with them except on the phone every now and then. I was kind of running my own show for the family, but still running my own show. All the reasons why I thought I drank, and all the ifs, if this would happen, I wouldn't drink. If this would happen, I wouldn't. All that happened. And I still drank, you know, because I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drunk and I drink. I had no clue at that point. They told me people told me, hey, I went to some meetings after I got out of that first rehab, just in basically name. I didn't have a sponsor. I'd go every now and then, so Stacy, my wife would think I was, which I was. They were sharing the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. People were greeting me with their hand up saying, you know, glad you're here. You know, do you have a sponsor? And I would say no. And I never got one. I mean, I don't know why. It just like would come in one. Who was it one time described? It was Clancy. I got that force field. And I was like, boom, things trip out to help you. You just can't get through it. I thought I could do it on my own. You know, what idiot drinks again after going to a rehab and a halfway? So, well, this one drank again, this idiot. And so 2 years, I'm like drinking for a month or two, and Stacy would catch me. So then that was a whole big, you know, I'm like, sorry, I'm drinking again, but it's not every night. And so she's like, oh, well, you're going to the rehab prevention class session at this place I was in. So I went to the rehab prevention, and for a week, I didn't drink. Prevented me there. I got like a A, you know, I was leading the meetings, you know, like star of the rehab prevention. And I got to the airport in Minnesota and was just hammered by the time I got on the plane to come home. But I, you know, I prevented for that week. And I'm still just running my own deal, you know, running my own show. And I had no idea how spiritually sick I was. And what the real reason was why I was drinking. And I didn't realize that I was absolutely powerless. I hadn't surrendered all those things. I mean, it's so clear today. And sometimes I'll wish, like, what if I just listened and done what they told me to do? And save that. I'd have those 4 years, kind of those 4 years, the 2 years dry, miserable, and then not drinking. And then the 2 years of just drinking. And there's some bad stuff that happened in the next 2 years. You know, stuff I can't. There's one person in my life that knows absolutely everything about me. One guy. Because I can't share with some people some of the things I did. But one guy knows, and that's my sponsor. He knows absolutely, and God. That's it. I shared that, all those, you know, the sordid places, the sordid people. I shared that with him. And he helped me outline an amends process out of the book to clean that stuff up where it doesn't hurt people. It only helps people. Because I don't, of my own, I'm the guy that says, I understand this. I will not do that. Blah, 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 blah. But without my sponsor and God, you know, that's my higher power. On my own, it's a bad deal. So those 2 years are bad. And what's really bad is the loneliness and just the trying to stop. You know, just that, why in the world, after I made another promise, why in the world am I drinking again? You know, what is going on? It doesn't make any sense. And I mean, I'm on business trips and not telling my family where I am. It just creating a lot of hype. And, you know, getting caught, apologizing, and not drinking for a month, and then drinking for a week, and getting caught, and this is it, done. Go to a meeting, pick up a white chip, but I don't get a sponsor, and I don't go back to that meeting. I'm just, you know, gonna stop on my own. And I tried working out. I tried working less. I tried working more. I tried psychiatry. I mean, I got a psychiatrist. My wife's like, all right, this is it. Caught you again. We got a psychiatrist lined up. You're going to see him on Monday morning, 7 a.m. And he's pretty reasonable for people, most people, not to be hammered at 7 a.m. on a Monday walking to a psychiatrist. Most people. And, but that worked for me for about a month and a half, 7 a.m. with that psychiatrist. And, you know, we went over my dad and we went over and there's nothing wrong with psychiatrists. I didn't need a psychiatrist. I need a sponsor in the program Alcoholics Anonymous and stop trying to do it on my own. I needed to surrender. It's what I needed to do. God bless this guy. He was great. I mean, we talked about my dad and my mom and we got deep. And then I finally got so rung up and anxious that I would drink those minis on the way over there just to deal with him and all the stuff, you know? And I mean, I think you probably could smell it, but I mean, the checks were cashing, right? You think he'd have let me come in there smelling like that if the checks were bouncing? No, they were cashing. And so we tried that. We tried, you know, all of it, and nothing worked. And what finally happened was, you know, we're living in Seville. Kate, our daughter, is like, I think she's four, maybe Teddy's eight. Because it would be 4 years. They're going to school at Marywood Lewis School in Charlottesville. And, you know, everything in my life that I wanted, I had. And I was just ruining things. So, it was one of these weeks where like I tried to stop again and I hadn't had a drink for a few days and it's the end of November. And what the plan is I'm supposed to go up to New Jersey and make a presentation for work and then come on back. And we've got this plan to go get this Christmas tree, right? The kids and I, Stacey, we're all going to go get Christmas tree, you know, put it up and have a good. So I drove up there and just like that story, the guy that went to DC and his business came off well. I mean, I went up there and my business came off well, and I'm on the way back, right? Mm-hmm. And the kids are thinking I'm going to be home that night or early in the morning or whatever. I don't know what happened. I wasn't standing at the threshold where I thought a highball would be a good idea before dinner, but I did stop in Baltimore, call Stacy, and said I had a few appointments the next day, which I didn't, and locked myself basically into a hotel room and didn't tell her where I was. And nobody knew where I was for like 2 or 3 days. Now, I didn't wake up that morning with that plan, right? Now, but I did it. And finally, I broke down and told them where I was. So my father-in-law and Stacy, my wife, came up to get me in Baltimore. And it's December 2nd. And I remember going out to the rental car that I'd had, and it was smashed. Like the side of it was all smashed up. I had no idea what happened. Come home. She drove me home, and I was throwing up in this trash bag all the way back. And, you know, that first rehab trip was kind of a little bit of a celebration. She and I had some cocktails before I got on the plane to go out there. We knew it was going to be great. You know, it was okay. It wasn't any celebrating going on with this one. And basically what the deal was is you got one more shot. And you can either pack your stuff up, or because of the kids, what are we going to do? You know, you can go to another rehab, go to the same one you want to, or and then if I catch you one more time, we're totally done, and I'm going to write this up. We'll get divorced, done. So I said, all right, I went to a different one. I went down in Greensboro, North Carolina, and. You know, for whatever reason, when I went down there, you know, I showed up at that first rehab place, drinking all the way out there on the plane and having a good time, and passed out in the van on the way to the rehab. It was actually there's a really nice golf course out there called Hazeltine, and it's in Minnesota. And then there's Hazelden, and I was so drunk that I wandered over to the guy. There's a group of guys going on a golf trip to Hazeltine. And I'm just like standing there with them, and they're like, buddy, I think you're supposed to be down there. And, oh yeah, sorry, maybe you get squared away, you can come with us next time. But this one, I mean, Stacy literally, I don't even think she'd slow down much to drop me off at Greensboro. You know, just goodbye, good luck. And so I'm in there, I'm in rehab over Christmas. You know, I'm telling my kids before we drove down there that I have to go away, and they're just crying. You know, a lot of havoc, a lot of pain. I don't know who I hit in that rental car. I don't know. But it'd been causing a lot of chaos, and ended up in that place. And the guy that my counselor there told me something. I remember early on, he said, yeah, you got to get a sponsor and do the steps. But one of the most important things you can do when you get back home is get yourself a solution-based home group and get in the middle of it and get a group of guys and gals that are doing the deal. And you'll figure that out when you get out of here. But just remember that. And why don't you get on your knees at night and start praying? Why don't you start praying for the willingness to maybe give up a little bit and think about alcoholics and think about other people other than yourself. Think about asking God for help or whatever your higher power is. And just listen. And I did. Christmas in rehab, I remember, you know, who are those idiots that go again? You know, clearly thinking that. God, I can't believe you. It's the fourth time in rehab. Wow. Well, there I was. And I was there making a gingerbread house with my buddy Scott on Christmas Eve. And I remember sitting there, and Scott was in advertising, and he's still sober today. We still keep in touch. He's down in Winston-Salem. And we had made this really nice gingerbread house, icing, creative guy, gumdrops. And the guy next to us, like, was coming off, I don't know what he was coming off of, and he was shaking and kept knocking it. He couldn't even put the walls up. And then the meth girl. I mean, it was, they were all, you know, so ours was, we won the gingerbread contest. And Scott and I are high five, and he goes, man, we won. And I started thinking, I'm in rehab. It's Christmas Eve. and I think I'm winning. Like, I mean, and I started thinking, I was like, you know what? You're just a loser. And I just, it was kind of like really, I just surrendered. It was kind of step one, making that stupid gingerbread house. You know, I looked around the room and I'm like, I'm no different than anybody. And I got out of there in January, and met a guy, a graduate of that place up in Charlottesville, and he met me the first night. I was terrified because I didn't want to drink again. I was scared to death. I was out of options. There's I had nothing left to do but Alcoholics Anonymous. There was nothing. Nobody's talking to me at home. Kids were still mad. Stacy just kind of, all right, you know, wanting to see some different action. You know, the talk is done. I've done enough talking. So I met with that guy and his sponsor. We went to a meeting in Charlottesville, Salvation Army. And he told me to stand at the door and introduce myself to people on the way out. And what happened was, and all the while I'm praying to God for the willingness to stay sober, but also to find a good time group. And two guys come up to me and, you know, just like it says in the responsibility pledge, I want the hand of AA always to be there. You know, I'm responsible. They were responsible that night. They put their hand out. You know, they put their hand out to a sick and suffering alcoholic and said, hey, why don't you come to our home group tomorrow night? We meet at 7:30 on Thursday nights. At that point, we were Hinton Avenue. Nobody remembers that one, Sam. And they said, we'll be there at 6:30, probably 6:15. And I'm like, that doesn't make much sense, but I will start to 7. But I'll be, and I rolled in there at 7, and the parking lot was full. And I saw the guy, those two guys, and went up to him and started to meet some people. And then we went downstairs, and I sat in the chair. And at that point in time, we did a lead in like we do now. And then you get called on to come up to the podium and share. And for the first time in my life, every single person who went up to that podium, I identified with. And I wasn't like, that's not me, because for whatever reason. And I guess I was just beaten down enough and had no other answers, but just to go, okay, yes. You know, I got a sponsor that night. And the core group of that home group, I looked around. I could tell who was doing the deal. First weekend, we came up. It wasn't too long. We came up to Madison for the speaker day and had that good food. And the sponsor I have today, I told him, Teddy was getting ready to do some baseball tryouts. He had T-ball, right? And I told Travis, my sponsor, I said, Travis, I got to go to T-ball. I can't go to this Madison event. He said, Dodie, you said you're going to go. You're going to drive us. It's commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, I promise you, Teddy will be fine with T-ball. You know, why don't you just get in the car with us and stop trying to do things your way? You know, because what that does is get you drunk. I promise you, if you just go with us and do what we do, you're going to be fine. So I did. Got in the car. First time I just did what he told me to do. So I came up here, had a great day. And then 5 years later, we won the McIntyre Little League Championship. I mean, you know what? Had I not gotten in the car, I don't know. If I'd been drunk, wouldn't have family. So I just started doing the deal. Every week we went through the book. Did everything in the book except when it says to go take a few drinks at the bar to see if you can control it. Everything else, we did it. And what he was trying to do is get me through, not to get sober and have a great life, but to be helpful to somebody else. That's the only reason I'm sober today, is to be helpful to somebody else. Because my primary purpose today can't be me and what my little plans and designs. Because if it is, I'd be home watching the Chiefs Bills. You know, watching the Lions, however that ended up. That's what I want to do. But I'm doing today what I still see those same guys who are still sober today. I mean, we see how people come and go all the time. But I'll tell you what. If my experience is the people that do the deal stay sober, you know? So getting involved, rolling with that group. And the neat thing, though, is they taught me, like, for the first 30, I'm 30 days sober, right, in that group. And one new guy joins the home group, and he doesn't have a car. So I have a car and I could take them to meetings. So next thing you know, I'm driving people to meetings. Like, I can be helpful 30 days sober. You know, another guy joins and he's, you know, he's like 5 days sober, right? I mean, when you're 5 days sober, I mean, I remember that. It's like, you're just trying not to blow your brains out. You just, somebody gets up here and talks about being 30 years sober and how great their life is. You're just like, oh my God, I just want to, you know, get through today. So regardless of whether you've got 24 hours or you've got more sobriety than somebody. And I learned that I can be helpful early on, even while I'm going through the steps. You know, like, you can go up to that person like, hey man, look, I know you're brand new, but let me tell you what I've done for the last 25 days. You know, let me show you who's a good sponsor. Let me tell you about some meetings you could go to. I'm happy to take you to some meetings. 12-step work for me started right away when I showed up in that home group, because the people in that group were moving their feet. And that's what I soon realized was a solution-based home. You know, I had to move to Richmond for a little bit a few years ago. It's got a strange work deal, and we had moved back to Northern Neck. And I knew Monday nights. I never knew where I was going to be because of work, but I knew Monday nights I was going to be in Richmond. So I called up buddy Eric and said, I want to come to Outlaw Safecraft. It's a solution-based home group. So if I lived in Madison, that's where I'd be. I can't tell you enough how important being around and in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous has been for me in my journey, rather than on the outskirts. You know, I mean, when I'm on the outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, even with a few years of sobriety, I'm pretty miserable. You know, I mean, I can get pretty angry. I mean, I can come home, you know, go through the steps and get to that point where I'm helping other people. And I think everything's great. And the character defects are like down to a low roar. And, you know, at that point, I'm eating a lot of ice cream and cookies. And I come home on a Thursday night and everything's been great in the house for a few years. And I roll in and, you know, probably shared. It felt great sponsoring guys. And I roll in the house and you know what? They've eaten my cookies and my ice cream. You know, I'm the guy who hid from them for days on end in a hotel room. And I'm the guy who put our family in danger in some situations that I got in those 2 years. But you ate my ice cream and my cookies. So I open that up and I'm like, oh, those ungrateful people. And the ice cream, and they shoved the ice cream back in there empty. So I slammed it on the ground and just screamed, the last thing, you've taken everything I've got. The last thing I have. So Stacy's there in the doorway looking at me like, what are you talking about? You got your family. So that's the kind of deal where you're right. I apologize. You know, I have to make amends that night to family. So it's sometimes difficult, but what I found is just normal living's pretty nice. My grand sponsor down in Buckingham said, you know, you kind of get break. You got to get some breaks between the rounds. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is breaks between the rounds. My dad gets really sick and passes away. I'm there with him. You know, I'm because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm able to look at my mom a whole different way. She was a beautiful, fun, amazing woman who was sick. And I look at her situation now, not from a point of how can you be that selfish, but I think about, God, it must have been so painful. How much pain do you have to be going through to actually do that? So I think about her with love and empathy and care today, and not anger and selfishness and wonder why would you do that? And I went up to her grave and read her a letter as my sponsor directed me, and I was able to make amends to her. You know, I was able to make amends to my dad. I was able to make amends to my wife. I was able to make, and all those amends were, we outlined how I'm going to do them, when I'm going to do them. And I work with my sponsor on all of them. You know, I can't get through life without Alcoholics Anonymous. And the cool thing is the more I do an Alcoholics Anonymous, the more time I have for life. And I don't think about my A life and my life. It's kind of like one life. You know, I've got those guys that I met in the home group, we do a lot of things together. You know, we go fishing, we play golf. You know, they're my family. They started sponsoring guys, and we would go to my house. You know, I wanted to bring guys in. I was shown how to live from the people in my home group. So when I sponsor someone, I like to bring them to my house to show my family and feed them dinner. Just so I can, I don't know. I want to be able to show like what a decent life can look like if you're in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I can share with them what a out of control, chaotic, selfish, horrible life looks like by using all that stuff that I was ashamed about and was going to hide about. I can share that with them and say, we are exactly the same, because when you drink, you don't know how what's going to happen. And when you don't drink, you have no defense on picking up again. And at some point you're gonna. And that's my experience. You know, I had to get to the point where there was nothing left. And I have to rely on God. You know, I have to remember that I don't know. I have to pause when I'm agitated. I have to think about God during the day. I mean, I like to read a little bit out of the book in the morning or the daily reflection, whatever gets you going. But if all I do is read it and not think about it for the rest of the day, you know, you got to do this stuff. You know, it's not just words. It's 100% actions, 100% actions. That's the benefit. You know, am I busy? Am I going to meetings? Am I just hanging out with the guys in the home group, or am I making sure that when the new person walks in and I don't know them, am I going up and putting my hand out like I was shown when I first showed up? You know, it's like every year, and my buddy Murph says this every year, he's like, it's just always more. It's always more to do. And that's the great thing about it. You know, I love it. I love being here with all of you. And, I'm really, really thankful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and just the people that paved the way for us to do this. You know, it's an amazing, amazing life, with troubles and tough times and, you know, little spats with the spouse and people at work that drive you crazy, but, you know, wouldn't trade it for $1 million. So, anyway, thank y'all. It's about enough out of me. And again, little advertisement. Come see us on the 24th. Thank y'all.